Hello and welcome to this episode of the Photonic Podcast with me, Jeremy, public member of the Photonic team, Angus Ramsey, the lead investigator, and today's guest, Holly Walton, research fellow at the University College London in the Department of Applied Health. Holly is playing a significant role in analysing the data emerging from the study on Photonic. Photonic is a research study funded by the National Institute for Health and Social Care Research to look at pre-hospital video triage, a new way to check whether patients are having a stroke. The Photonic team are looking at how pre-hospital video triage services are put into action, whether and how they are experienced by patients, carers, and staff. They're also looking at whether these services make a difference to patient care, and how well stroke patients do, and whether the services are good value for money. In our podcast, we want to keep our listeners updated on how Photonic is progressing and give a bit of insight on the people involved with our work. So, Angus, can I ask you first, is there anything you want to say about how the Photonic study is going since our last podcast?
Thanks, Jeremy. Nice to see you both. I think the main updates are we're continuing to collect data. We're working hard on developing our emerging findings. But also it's been great to see some of the research being presented in conferences by Holly over the last few weeks, and she'll be able to tell more about that. We also had our study steering committee a few days ago, which brings together clinical and policy and voluntary sector and patient perspectives to give an external view, an independent perspective on how the work's going, and to give us advice on how things are to progress. So that was really useful, and we're all sort of energized for the coming weeks and months to keep progressing the work. So those are the main updates, I think.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Kind of curious, Angus, today we're interviewing Holly. At what point, Angus, did you invite Holly to take part in the study? Was she part of designing the research question from the beginning, or were her skills identified as necessary as the design progressed?
That's a good question. We always knew that we needed a really well-skilled qualitative researcher. When developing the project, Holly wasn't directly involved in planning the proposal. She was very much aware of what was going on, as I would come into team meetings and complain about the latest struggles with developing the research plan and so on. She was involved in lots of discussions about, you know, some of the wider issues around the services, and she was aware of some of the emerging findings from the initial evaluation. But I think it was more towards when we were getting close to being funded that we started discussing the possibility of Holly joining up with a team. And obviously I was very hopeful that she would, but these things are always a bit uncertain. It comes down to how much availability researchers have. And I was just sort of delighted when we established that Holly was available and was happy to join. But I'm sure she can say a lot more about that side of things.
So you and Holly already knew each other and were working together before this study?
Yes. So we're part of the same research group. Gosh, we've been working together, I think, is it 5 or 6 years now? Oh, that's amazing. I think we first worked together on a project looking at coordination of care for people with rare diseases. But we've got just quite a nice, small but perfectly formed research group led by Professor Naomi Fulop. We're all interested in how care is organized and delivered using different research methods, so qualitative and quantitative approaches, and we meet regularly. We sort of are chatting on Teams and having weekly catch-ups on a Friday afternoon just to see how we're all doing. So yeah, it's quite a strong team with shared professional passions, at least.
Golly, it's rather remarkable. Serendipitous, I'd go on to say. Mm. So what does Holly do? What does a research fellow do in quality research that you, as the researcher, the principal investigator, don't do?
A lot of these things depend on how the research project itself is designed. So in many cases, project investigator, the chief investigator will be accountable for the overall running and design of the work and oversight, but not necessarily quite so directly involved in data collection. However, in the case of this study, I was very keen to have quite a close involvement in the sort of data collection and analysis sides of things. So I'm kind of working in a similar way to Holly on certain aspects of the project in terms of interviewing, conducting observations and so on. So it depends on the project, and it depends on how that's designed. And so, yeah, it varies. But in this case, we're sort of a very collaborative team, sort of divvying up data collection responsibilities and meeting regularly to talk about what's coming out of things. But really, yeah, I think I'd rather hear Holly's perspective on this stuff, I think.
I've been doing PPI for 12 years or so, and there's never a day go by when I don't learn something new. I find it all so exciting, and you just give me a new insight. So that's rather wonderful. So turning to you, Holly, what other research studies have you been actively involved in before Photonic?
Yeah, so as Angus mentioned, I've been in the Department of Applied Health Research now for 5 years. But before this, I undertook my PhD research, which was looking at how interventions for people with dementia were delivered and engaged with. And then I started working in this department, and the main study that I was working on to start with was called CONCORD, which was the Coordinating Care for Rare Diseases study. And this study looked at whether and how services are coordinated for people living with rare diseases and how we can improve care coordination. Alongside this project and that project, I also work as part of the NIHR, so the National Institute for Health and Social Care Research funded rapid service evaluation team. And within this team, I've also been working on a few different evaluations. So one of remote home monitoring for COVID-19, and also recently an evaluation of peer support services for social care in prisons in England and Wales. So very varied studies. But throughout all of these studies, I've got a real interest in how the services are put into practice in different places, so how they're similar and different in different places, and how patients and carers feel about engaging with these services and their experience.
My word. I mean, it's amazing what you've done already. I'm very, very impressed. This study, particularly Photonic, is looking into the ambulance service. Do you think there's enough research into the ambulance service, or is there scope to do more?
That's a good question. And actually, I was recently at an emergency services conference in Manchester called the 999 EMS conference. And when I was there, it was really interesting to hear about all of the fantastic research that's happening in emergency services. But as with anything, services will keep changing and adapting. So there'll always be room to do more research, I think. And I think Angus would agree with that as well in terms of any topic. There's always room to do more.
If you had the money to commission a research question as a PI, what would be your choice for the most pressing one?
So that's a difficult question. So I've got lots of ideas of things I would like to research, but I think it's really important that any research we do is needed and it will help to make progress. So I think to make sure that this would be the case, it would be necessary to speak with members of the public who use healthcare services, healthcare professionals, charity representatives, to sort of get their views on what they think is the most pressing research question and why. And then from this, we can develop these ideas. I think that's kind of this good starting point for any of these projects. But there's lots of interesting topics that are good to explore, I think.
If ever you do start to ask that question, count me in. I think you and I will have a great conversation.
Of course.
So what happened that helped you decide to enter the fetid world of academic research?
Yeah, so this happened back when I was doing my undergraduate psychology, actually. So I did an undergraduate degree in psychology at Nottingham Trent University. And while I was there in my second year, I was lucky enough to receive funding from the British Psychological Society to undertake a summer research project. So this was the first sort of foray into academic research, and it made me realise that I really liked it, and I've always enjoyed learning new things, and I really enjoyed the variation and sort of ability to learn new things on a daily basis that research helps you to be able to do. So this led to me applying for a PhD, and again, I was quite lucky to receive funding to undertake my master's and PhD at UCL. So yeah, it kind of started from there, and the passion has sort of grown ever since. And I think one of the things I really like about research is sort of piecing together different findings, a bit like a puzzle, to kind of come up with the overall messages from the study.
Right. So the genesis of this is in your psychology qualification. So is that in the background now? Or are you still interested in psychology?
So it comes into everything we do within our research as well. So we're always looking at sort of barriers and facilitators to experience and engagement. So that obviously relates to human behaviour. So links back to the psychology background. I think it's really good to be interdisciplinary. So I think it's really nice to be able to link my psychology background with the health service research work that we do today. And I think it helps to strengthen everything that we do as well in that sense. And actually it's quite good because everybody's got different backgrounds. We all come from lots of different degrees, lots of different PhD backgrounds, and I think this is really helpful in sort of drawing together different perspectives on similar questions. I think it's really nice.
I'm interested in your perspective about pre-hospital telemedicine. Do you think it could be useful in clinical settings other than stroke?
So this is something that we're actually asking in the interviews with healthcare professionals who are involved in these services. And so far, there seems to be positive views that the services may potentially be applicable to other situations, particularly because the services offer a way for patients, carers and ambulance staff members to be able to speak with those specialists as early as possible to get advice on what the next step should be. So this is quite a nice thing about the service. And our early findings sort of indicate that there may be slight differences in what situations the video aspect of the service might be helpful for and what situations telephone might be helpful for. So there may be slight differences in applicability to different conditions. But generally, there seems to be a view that it can be helpful. But hopefully we'll be able to share more on this soon as we get more findings in.
Excellent. So if you could lead an investigation into another area of clinical medicine using telemedicine, which area would that be?
Yeah, so I think a particular interest of mine would be looking at different types of telemedicine or different types of remote services, healthcare services, and seeing what impact they have on inequalities relating to access to healthcare. So can different groups of people access these services? Can everyone access them in the same way? If not, why not? What are the problems to access? What are the problems that are stopping people from engaging with the services? And do we need to adapt services more to help other groups to be able to engage with them? So that's kind of something I would be interested in doing more research on in terms of these sorts of digital services more generally, I think.
Who knows where this is going to lead? I do hope it leads to where you're wanting to go. You recently gave presentations at two conferences about the emerging findings from Photonic. Can you share with us what those findings are?
Yeah, of course. So these are obviously early findings from the data that we have so far, so they might change as we collect more data. But as you mentioned, recently presented at the 999 EMS conference and the Health Service Research UK conference. And the findings that we presented there was that we've found that these services are used in different places quite differently in terms of who conducts the calls, what time the service operates, so when it starts and when it finishes every day. When video is used or when telephone is used tends to differ in different places, and the amount of training that people receive to help them to deliver this service differs in different places as well. We've found that staff are generally supportive of these services and think that they're valuable, but there can be some challenges in terms of things like Wi-Fi access, having enough capacity within the team to deliver the services, and there can sometimes be some disagreements between where ambulance staff think that patients should be taken and where stroke specialists think that patients should be taken once the triage call has been done. And in terms of patients and carers, we've seen positive views, especially that patients are very happy to be able to speak with specialists in their own homes, because that feels quite reassuring to them at that point of time, and that the hospital was well prepared for them when they were taken to the specialist unit. It's fair to acknowledge, though, that experiences can be different depending on what happens after the triage call, so where the patients are taken. So if they're taken to a specialist place, if they're taken to a local emergency department, or if they stay at home. So we need to look into this a little bit more by speaking with more patients and carers in the next part of the study.
Ah, thank you. Well, I'm just thinking that our audience consists of clinicians and academics, but also we believe members of the public. I just wonder if you could ask, if you wouldn't mind me asking, what does applied health actually mean? Because you work in the Department of Applied Health. Honestly and truly, I don't know what that actually means in real terms.
Yes, this is a good question. So basically, it just means that all of the research we do links to daily life, in terms of that we're applying research to services that are in practice, they're happening, patients and carers are receiving these services. So we're studying what's going on in the healthcare system currently. So we're applying research to everyday situations. I don't know, Angus, if you wanted to develop on that a little bit more, but that's kind of how I would explain it.
I think that summarizes it nicely. It's that idea of health research that is being applied and looking at how healthcare is being delivered in real situations from the perspectives of people who are actually experiencing it in reality.
Tommy, I mean, a lot of research is academic, a lot of research is clinical, and it's from my perspective as a member of the public, I would like to see far more research applied in practice than there is. But this brings us close to the end of our time. So is there anything else, Holly or Angus, that you would like to add?
No, I think that's everything from my perspective, Jeremy. Thank you.
Thank you. Angus, is there anything else?
No, it's just it's flown. It's been a fascinating discussion. Really lovely to hear more from Holly, even though we meet regularly. It's lovely to hear you in this context too.
There's just one question I would like to ask that have. Holly, in your work, in your perspective, do you have either an academic or clinical hero?
Oh, that's a good question, Jeremy. I think it would be hard to pick one. I think everybody I've worked with has been very supportive of me and helping me to learn more in my career. So I think all of my academic inspirations, I think, would be everybody that I've worked closely with in the past 8-9 years to get to where I am now. I know that's a really sort of non-clear answer, but I think everybody has been so inspirational and so helpful, and I've learned so much from everyone I've worked with. So I think that would be my answer.
That's a very, very generous answer. So, you know, I just want to say thank you, Holly and Angus. The next podcast will be along very soon. So if you'd like to learn more about the study, the Photonic website has a short explainer video and the link to the detailed research plans and all the other for podcasts in this series. Or you can drop Angus a line directly. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.